Welcome to Lili Logic. I am Lisa Smith Henderson, your host, and Lili is my childhood nickname and also my grandmother name. And Lili is really just me. No masks, it's the real deal. And today I've got with me Samantha, who likes to be called Sammy. Sammy, I've been talking to a lot of my friends who have children of different ages. So, Sammy, you are a single mom, you have a full-time career, and you have a teenage daughter who is in high school. How is that juggling? How's that going for you?
You know, in some ways it's easier now because she's a teenager and, you know, I can leave the house and she is legally allowed to stay by herself for, you know, not overnight yet. We're not there at this point. But she is able to stay by herself for several hours during the day. So that part, you know, being able to go to dinner with a friend at the spur of the moment is possible as long as I, you know, it's sort of as long as I get all my chores done, I can go to the ball, right? So I can, as long as I feed the kid, make sure she's doing her homework, make sure she takes a shower, all of those things, then I can, you know, go to the ball with my friends. But, you know, whereas when she was little, I couldn't do that at all, you know, without having to call a babysitter or get her, you know, connected with her grandmother or that kind of thing, just to be able to sort through some of that stuff. And it was never able to be last minute. It always had to be planned. So in that way, things are easier. In other ways, things are more complicated because she has her own life and she has friendships that I want to make sure she's fostering those friendships. She's got after school activities, which I didn't really have her do a lot of after school activities when she was younger. I know a lot of parents are signing their kids up for baseball and all of the things, and we just never really did that. But just coordinating the, you know, becoming someone's chauffeur is the other part of that, and still being responsible for scheduling and feeding and that kind of thing. So as far as juggling, you know, I mean, it's always been, I've been a single parent from the beginning. It's always been trying to figure out what the balance is. And, you know, inevitably for someone like me, I always go in one direction too far. So whether it's like I'm overworking but not paying attention to my family responsibilities or my personal life, or sometimes I'm too focused on my personal life and not enough on my work, or, you know, so it's just sort of having to recalibrate on a day-to-day basis, or, you know, probably more like every couple months when I start to realize like, oh, that fell off, you know.
Yeah, tell me about that work-life balance. I mean, is there such a thing?
I can say I was just having this conversation yesterday. I think depending on the company and the career and the hour, all of the, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into it. Once upon a time, I did not have work-life balance. I love to work and I would prefer to be, you know, busy and feeling more, you know, collaborative and productive and all of those things. But that also can lead to some burnout as we're trying to juggle all of the things. But I do think it's possible, but it's so rare, especially in the country that we live in. I don't think that it is possible to make all of those things happen, you know, to be able to get your kids ready in the morning, go to work, clock out, be done for the day, and then be able to spend time with your family at night. For me, it used to be especially get the kid to school, get home, do the, you know, kid thing, and then get back onto the computer. I'm in a job now at a company. I mean, it's the culture of this company is much more family oriented and health oriented. Like one of the co-founders today was saying like, hey, I don't want to do this meeting at this time because I like to ride my bike at lunch. And I'm like, that's really cool. You know, don't worry. Yeah. So I think, I mean, you know, they are very good about having those boundaries, because without that kind of culture, I will fall into whatever work culture is there. So yeah, as far as work-life balance, but I don't know that balance really exists at all. I mean, I think it's a constantly recalibrating.
Well, and I didn't work outside the home. I worked some, but And I have friends who don't work outside the home, and they still struggle with the guilt and the, I mean, it's like there's just plain old, maybe in our DNA, mommy guilt. Like, oh, I can't do it perfectly. Am I screwing up my children? I want them to have their feelings, but so one of the things that came up that I wanted to ask you about is what we would have called in my day back talk.
Let me pause. I want to go back to this guilt thing.
Okay, do.
I do not think it's in our DNA to feel mommy guilt. I think that we've been set up in a society and in a culture that for generations and generations, our responsibility was being only mother, only homemaker, or only one thing. And your worth as a woman was whether or not you had children. And whether or not you worked, inside the home or outside the home. And then with every wave of feminism that we've had, the idea is, okay, go out. Now you have the choice to go out into the world. But what a lot of women have done, especially I think in less so now, the birth rates are declining because women are now deciding between having a career and having a kid, because what we have found out is it is not easy to do both. And women are still doing 70% of the work at home, even though they're working the same hours as their husbands. As someone who's a single parent, I've always had to do it both ways. So I don't really, and it is challenging. And I think I have probably not succeeded as much as I could have had I not had a kid. I had a kid at 21, so if I had not done that, I probably would be further along in my career. But I also think I've totally screwed up my child because I've been at work or not as available or trying to live a more full life outside of just being a mother. So I don't think it's in our DNA. I mean, you think about, if you look at pre-living in separate homes with your individual families, if we're living in groups and taking care of each other, we're seeing, the mothers are taking care of each other's kids, in these kind of communities, and then as well as doing the gathering of the food or whatever that looks like.
Well, now
And
that was a really long time ago.
that was a really long time ago, but
I mean, even in the 50s, there weren't, I mean, in most cultures, in WASP America, there wasn't the extended family helping take care of everything. It was
absolutely.
little your nuclear family, and maybe you had a good neighbor or a friend, or if you were lucky, a family down the street.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm talking about even, yeah, because 50s certainly is sort of the trope that we all think of, June Cleaver is in the house and she's the perfect mother because she's only doing that. And, the dad goes and he comes back and he doesn't have a computer to get back to. Like, those are the things that we're thinking about. When we talk about the beginning of that concept, and really, I mean, you think about it, television probably was the thing that ruined us as mothers is because of June Cleaver, it's different cultural times. I mean, you think about with World War II and women started working and there wasn't a choice and nobody probably said, oh, my mother abandoned me because she had to go to work. It was like, well, my father was at war, So yeah, I think we have gotten to a place where, yeah, from a feminism perspective too, I do think that it is a lot easier to control people by making them feel guilty.
Yes. And in America, too, we don't have the built-in safeties like they do in other countries, where
Oh,
you
yeah.
a lot of time off, paid time off, 6 weeks of required vacation, mental health days where you can call in and go, I don't like the way the wind's blowing. I mean, literally in Germany, they have that. The wind's blowing
Absolutely.
a funky
Yeah.
way, call in, like, I'm not coming to work. No, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I worked in an industry that was specifically for, geared towards parents, and that company only gives 12 weeks or no. Yeah, 9 weeks, maybe 12 weeks of paid maternity leave. And, in other countries and in other companies in the US, people are getting 6 months. And
And some
even
get 3 weeks.
and
Let's.
some get 3 weeks. Yeah. I mean, some are, yeah. I mean, turning their insides out it through labor and or C-sections and still having to show up to work in 3 weeks. So yeah, and that is part of why we are seeing declining birth rates.
And this is really quite interesting. I'm glad you touched on the guilt part. Do you think some of it is because of the self-awareness too? Like, I waited until I had not quite maxed out my career, but I had certainly achieved almost all of my career goals when I had my first child at 34. I had my next child at 40. So it was like, and I knew about myself. I had to have help. I always had outside help because I knew emotionally I wasn't capable of that. But I had this idea I was going to be the perfect mom. And it took me well into my 60s to go, oh, that was impossible. And to have to say to my children, I'm so sorry. Because for me to be perfect meant my children couldn't say, you sucked at some things because I wasn't perfect. And I think that is, and all I knew to do was the opposite of my own mothering. So it's like, okay, well, I'm going to do everything opposite. I am going to be June Cleaver. I am going to bake cookies. I am going to go to every performance. No matter what, I am going to go to every little football game, every little soccer game, even if my child never gets off the bench. So some of that is because I was emotionally more aware. It made me more worried about screwing my kids up. And that's what I hear parents today saying, ones that are, pretty savvy about self-care and therapy and 12-step. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think I do. I think self-awareness is awesome. And I do think that it's important for us to understand the repercussions of our actions, what it means to other people, if we're being caring or not. And I think that we have gotten to a place with therapy, probably therapy specifically, in my own experience and in talking with some friends, where we've gotten to this point where we are blaming our parents too much and forgetting that they are absolutely humans. And for I'm watching a friend of mine has two adult children, and when one of her kids was 19 and the other one was like 16, she moved to Philadelphia, and the older one stayed where he was for college. And I had a similar situation where, in my mind, it was like I was supposed to leave the nest, but my parents ended up moving away. And I just was like,
How dare you?
how dare you? How dare you be your own person and live your own life? The only reason for you to exist on this planet is to help me. And so it was so easy to blame them, and I'm seeing it in this other dynamic too of that feeling of abandonment, because as parents, we as mothers, let me pause and say, as mothers, I can't speak to all fathers. There are a lot of super involved dads that I know of this gen of my generation of millennials, like really present fathers, but previous to this generation, a man's job was to work and provide financially for his family, and a mother's job was to be at home and provide everything else. And then also, if she wanted to work, you probably should work, because then it would be better for your kids so that they know you can achieve your dreams and be a mother and do everything, So I think we're doing a disservice to parents out there and the kids by saying that your entire world has to be your kids, because when one day you do one thing that isn't for them, it's for yourself, the kids are like, well, where'd you go? I'm the center of your entire universe. Yeah, I think there are a lot of systems of guilt. And here's the other thing too. Social media, the internet, has made it sound like there is a perfect way to parent. But if you go to one article and say, okay, this is how I should, breastfeed my child versus bottle feed, right? Those kinds of information, and then the comments that people will get about what is actually better, rather than just saying, you know what, I'm going to do whatever feels right in the next moment. Or, for me, I didn't do a ton of research when I had a baby. I just went to my mother for everything. I just was like, how did you do it? We're doing that, and whether or not that was the quote unquote right thing to do, it was what had served in my family in that moment. And I do think I didn't suffer from a lot of this, oh God, I don't know what's right, having a kid, having a baby, and it does get more complicated with more awareness out there. So I think you're right about that.
Now, I will say, because I don't want the media or social media to get blamed for everything. When I had my daughter, I lived in an in-town area of Atlanta that was had a lot of hippies and, well-off hippies, granola types. And I was kind of a glam. I wasn't a granola type, but I did believe in organic food. These women, we would all meet at the park. None of them wore any makeup. I'm there with my leopard, like little kitty heels. And they're talking about doing their own organic baby food. And I'm thinking, I'm a mess. Like my kid is going to be completely fucked up because I bought the organic baby food from the Whole Foods. I didn't grind it myself. Now, there was no social media, but there still was that peer pressure.
Yeah,
Now,
that,
if I'd
yeah.
hung out with a different group, it would have been, you're not bottle feeding? Like, what's wrong? You're breastfeeding? Oh my God, that's so like, oh, you're such a hippie. It all depends on where you're coming from.
That's such a good point. Yeah, and it is, you're right. It is not just the internet. It's the internet has made it easier to go and second guess yourself all of the time. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure the mommy and me groups are also really challenging. And because when I had a kid, none of my friends had were my friends are having babies now, and so they look at me as being the expert, and I'm like, ha ha, guess what, I had no idea what I was doing, and neither will you. And I think for me, that's been something that's been really relieving, is that nobody knows what they're doing. I certainly don't. I am having to look to the people that I trust around me, and also to my child, to see like what's going to work and what's not. I did that organic baby food in the blender for like 3 months, and then I was like, this is too much work, I can't do it. I was like so hardcore about breastfeeding, and then my family took one trip, and I was like sitting around pumping the whole time because we were going to be around. And my mother was finally like, you're killing yourself by sitting around and just pumping all of the time. Cut it out. We're getting some formula, So yeah. So then she did both, and that was fine,
I have a question from another parent who has children younger than yours. How do you have the sex talk and when? Because every time she's tried to approach her daughter, who's close to 11, that's like, don't talk to me about sex. I won't have that conversation. How and when do you do that?
Well, I guess I should do that right now, huh? Just kidding. Hello, child. I mean, I had there are certainly certain kinds of education in school, like the well, depending on what city you're in and what state you're in, I'm sure, to where some of the biology of it is covered. I think for me, what is more important than even just the sex talk, and what is the sex talk like? This is how babies are made, or this is what, people like get naked and then things happen. What is that exactly? And I think for me, even more importantly, as I am, still learning myself, what is it to date someone? What is it to have a connection with a person? What is it to value physical touch and value yourself and all that stuff? So I think there's a lot of ways to probably have the conversations that need to be had about valuing ourselves enough to keep ourselves safe and to be with people who will also keep us safe, rather than it just being the mechanics of it. So yeah, I don't know. I'd have to ask the internet when the right time is,
You could always
but
ask your mother what she did.
Yo, I know. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think my mother caught me probably too early, and my father caught me too late, with the sex talk. And it was like, especially when he came to, I think me and my brother, we both were just like, too little, too late, man, And I think my father was probably
What were
shocked.
you, like 20?
I mean, yeah, exactly. I just, it was like, okay, good call, good job, dude, And I think that because parents get so uncomfortable about those conversations, we are missing a lot of what is more important about that. I mean, like I have a friend who her son is 18, and she would make him take her on dates to practice, and all his little friends, she would say, y'all are taking me out. We're in the South. And she said, y'all are going to take me out, and you're going to open the door for me, and I'll give you money, and you can pay for my, and she started doing that, I think, when they were 12.
Oh my
And
God, what a great idea.
yeah, I think it's
I mean,
great.
I think it's a great idea. Some people might think it was creepy, but I think it's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea. I think it's a, yeah, I think, certainly being in the South is probably a little bit different in terms of how we are still operating when it comes to heteronormative heterosexual relationships. And then for someone like me, who my child is more probably sexually fluid, and so teaching her, is it who, how do you treat another person if there aren't those sort of clear understandings of who opens the door, who pays for dinner, that kind of thing, when you're not in those heteronormative relationships. So, yeah.
Well, that's one thing nice about being older. As the grandmother, I just say, I'm older, so therefore you should open the door. Doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl or whatever you are, it's like, I'm the aged.
Yeah.
I'm not really, but I like to pull that card as a grandmother sometimes. So that's a great point. So it isn't just the sex talk. And I do want to go to this other thing that we hit on. And kind of glossed over was the what I would consider back talk.
Okay.
And I hear kids do that, and I think I would never allow my children to talk to me like that. Now, some of that was wrong because I was brought up in a you do not complain, you do not pout, you put on a happy face, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. So what I tried to do with my kids was say, you're welcome to your feelings, but you're not going to be ugly to me. And I think sometimes we get sort of lost in the, you can have your feelings and I'll take the disrespect because I'm your parent. So what are your thoughts on this?
So this is a tricky one, because my mother, we were not allowed to talk back, and if we did or even started to open our mouths, we would get the look. And I think I was probably more afraid of that look than anything. And now, over time, I have also learned the look.
Oh, good. That's so great.
Oh, it took me years. I mean, because my kid didn't really talk back up until these teenage years. She just doesn't. She was a rule follower or whatever, and now she's individuating and she's doing the teenage thing. So I'm in the thick of it, of this, like, everything that I say is stupid. So trying to figure out a way to acknowledge the feelings and be a safe place for a kid to talk about them. And I've also come into acceptance that I am her parent, and she is going to think that I am stupid and embarrassing and whatever. So I've put other people in place around her to be safe people. She has a tutor that I think she's probably able to talk to about certain things. A good friend of mine picks her up from school a couple of times a week and they talk. I've got other friends that I have introduced her to that I think would be really good influences, as kind of aunt so and so. And just to be able to have that. Another adult who is not her parent, who won't take it personally, or that we're not, they're not living in the same space. But in terms of back talk, yeah, I mean, I give the look. I don't, and I will try to have conversations with her. Because here's the other thing. Sometimes I snap at her, and it's not really about her. It's really about I'm running late, I'm in a bad mood, I'm upset, whatever. So a lot of times what I'll do is if I snap at her, I come to her later and I apologize. So I'm showing by example that yes, I am gonna snap. It's gonna happen. As a human being, I'm gonna have feelings, I'm gonna have a first reaction, but the way that I clean it up is really important. So, and she does that with me too now. So like sometimes,
Aww.
yeah, so I'll give her the look and she'll go, "Sorry." One time she says to me, "Sorry, I'm just frustrated with people who don't know things that I know." And I was like, "Okay, that was a really nice way to say you're stupid, you know?" Yeah.
Well, I mean, what blows my mind is a kid that would be that intelligent to even say that to me. Like,
Yeah, well, she's been
oh
in
yeah.
therapy a long time, you know, so that
Well,
definitely helps. But there's
she's
also, let me, I'm
probably.
going to pull this up. There's a blog, like an Instagram account or a blog called, I think it's called Big Little Feelings. Big Little Feelings, it's on Instagram. They've got a website or whatever. But I mean, I'm looking right now. It says, "How to Get Your Toddler to Listen the First Time. Easy tip to prevent sibling rivalry from the start." You know, so that's some of those. There's another one that I follow, and I can't remember the name of it now, where it talks about, you know, these moments of needing to acknowledge your kids' feelings. Like, what are the things that, you know, common scenarios that parents are having to deal with where, you know, the kid says something and you immediately want to shut it down, but instead of doing that, you open up a dialogue. And if I can find it, I'll shoot it your way. But
Yeah.
oh, here it is. It's big. The other one, of course, it's called Big Life Journal. For instance, I mean, like this one I saw the other day that I thought was really sweet, where she says, "Lately, I've started intentionally talking to my kids about their dad and bragging about him. Like, did you see that your dad stayed up late fixing that? Your dad is so thoughtful, blah, blah, blah." One day, her 6-year-old comes in and says, "Whoa, it looks really clean in here, Mom. You did a great job." And what happens is, you know, kids are going to mirror everything we do. Having come from an industry that did baby stuff, like from 0 to 5, that's all they're doing is learning from you, mimicking everything. You don't, you know, the part of the reason that you see all of these like little kitchen sets for sale in, you know, retailers is because kids are watching their parents cook. You know, they see you on your cell phone, they want a cell phone. Like that's the deal.
Yeah.
So this kid repeats what he'd been hearing from his mom, you know, so things like that.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, even it's things in here where it's like my kids had been fighting all morning, saying mean things to each other. The mom's had enough and she finally, let's see, what does she say? "Oh, this is so sweet." She said, "I grabbed 2 candles from the shelf and lit them while they watched. These 2 candles are you. Their light is what makes you shine." She blew out one of the flames and said, "When you say something unkind to each other, it's like this, you're dimming each other's light." So it's just like, I know. So it's just,
Aw, who can, okay, what parent is that effing conscious that you stop
I
to go, oh, let me make this a little spiritual moment? I mean,
know.
that's
Welcome
really
to the
cool.
granola life, you know, I guess. I mean, I do think that that is part of that awareness, right? Where it's like we do know more and more the things that are going to really fuck up your kids, you know, and I mean, you know, my kid will be in therapy forever talking about mommy issues just because that's the easiest person to blame. But I do think that we have more awareness about how to talk to each other and, you know, what it looks like to nonviolently communicate. There's just a lot more knowledge at our fingertips. And let me actually say, though, that is true for more privileged families. I don't know that that is true for, you know, people with less resources.
Right. Yeah. It's easy to speak from this position. Good.
Exactly. I mean,
Very
I've,
good point. Yeah. Where
and
you're
that's
not.
not to say that less privileged families are not doing those exact same things. It's just, yeah, it's just a different experience that I can't speak to.
Well, Sammy, my goodness, this has been a wealth of information. And will you stick around for a little bit? I want to talk to you about a few other things. I've got intergenerational trauma on my list, therapy for kids. And I want to know if you really think there's such a thing as self-care. All right, we'll continue all of this when we return with Sammy on Lili Logic. Go to lililogic.com for more information, and we'll put in the show notes some of the Instagram links that Sammy had talked about. All right, we'll be back shortly.